You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and this will be going out on the 11th of January, 2024. I want to talk about the Israeli economy under conditions of war. Of course, Israel's constantly at war with somebody, but this is different. But before I do that, if you haven't read the South African legal, what they call an application, to the International Criminal Court of Justice, which I don't take very seriously, but it's a catalog of the charges of genocide going back several decades, not just in this case. But let me read Section 142 of the South African application. As of the date of this publication, and this is that, by the way, December 29th, 2023, an estimated 21,110 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza, including almost 10,000 children. 55,000 Palestinians have been badly injured, including at least 8,663 children, of whom over 1,000 are amputees, disabled for life. Approximately 70% of those killed are said to be women and children. One Palestinian child in Gaza has been killed approximately every 15 minutes since Israel commenced military action in Gaza as of 7 October 2023. Thousands more are missing under the rubble. 61 hospitals and healthcare facilities in Gaza have been damaged or destroyed. Many have been placed under siege or have been subject to forced evacuation. And only 13 hospitals are still partially functional, weighted under by mass overcrowding. 311 health workers have been killed, many while working, meaning that many of the wounded, including seriously injured children, cannot access healthcare. An estimated 5,500 women are giving birth in unsafe conditions every month. Babies are dying from preventable causes. In addition to disease and malnutrition, premature babies have died due to a lack of fuel to supply hospital generators. Others have been found decomposing in their hospital beds, medical staff having been forced to evacuate. Over 60% of the homes in Gaza have been damaged or destroyed. Vast swaths of Gaza have been destroyed, including villages, refugee camps, towns, and cities that have been or are deliberately being rendered uninhabitable. Israel has made a humanitarian response impossible with constant bombardment, including of safe routes. Almost 2 million people, nearly 85% of the population, are displaced, including elderly, wounded, and disabled people living in makeshift tents, lacking any or adequate sanitation and water, in UN schools with relatives. The entire population is facing starvation. 93% of the population in Gaza is facing crisis levels of hunger, with more than 1 in 4 facing catastrophic conditions, that is, with death imminent. Against that background, the Israeli Prime Minister asserted on December 25th, 2023, quote, "We are not stopping. We are continuing to fight, and we are deepening the fighting in the coming days, and this will be a long battle, and it is not close to being over," end quote. Now, this Section 142 is a bit of a summary, which is why I cited it. But the causes, the quotations, the figures, where they get the figures from, everything you could think of is in this brief filed by South Africa. And as of this broadcast, there is one Israeli member of the Knesset who is in favor of bringing this in front of the international court. We all know that's not going anywhere. There's no way this would ever be permitted to act on, but it's now spread everywhere. Every aspect of this is undeniable. Now, specifically, this has economic consequences. Israel has always has been in war. The economy, thanks to the U.S., usually bounces back. But people are saying quite the opposite. including Israeli newspapers. So I searched for a few articles on this question. Very few people are talking about the coming depression. They use the word recession. When they use that, you know what they mean. That's just a neologism to use for any economic downturn. Obviously, this war has left catastrophic effects on the Palestinians. But not a whole lot of people are talking about what Israel is doing economically speaking. There's no aspect of Israel that's not in serious trouble right now, socially, the politics, security, and certainly the economy. The deterioration of Israel's relationships with any international bodies is proceeding apace, including those that are dominated by Jews, as they disregard any kind of humanitarian understanding. Because they've destroyed civilian facilities, hospital, schools, homes, whatever, and that this is nothing new, Israel, probably for the first time, is internationally isolated. It's only the Jewish lobby's power in Congress that keeps the U.S. spigot open. And this was right at the time Netanyahu announced his policy before the war. They were making headway with the Saudis, the UAE, and now that's over. The recognition, the trade, the financial transactions, that's all history now. So beyond that, the internal tensions in Israel, which were awful to begin with, now has increased. Those extreme settler parties don't have a lot of support in Israel itself, which is why they're tiny. But they exercise an influence way beyond their numbers. This has been just one negative after another. I mean, right within Israel, among Jews, about 500,000 have been forced to leave the country since the beginning of these operations. And people anywhere near the combat zone, about another 500,000, have had to move elsewhere. So you have a demographic shift amongst Jews, not just Palestinians. And of course, thanks to Israeli policy, everyone is frightened of yet another attack or rockets or whatever affecting their psychological well-being. By the way, one of the most interesting parts of the South African brief is their sections on the mental health of Palestinians. That doesn't come up at all. But the trauma, the severe mental issues of children, not just in Palestine, West Bank, and Gaza, is beyond hope at this point. But in Israel too, the number of suicides has increased dramatically in Israel since this began. Israel's economy, of course, was run by the U.S., supported by technology imports, sometimes gas exports. They've seen rising living standards up until Netanyahu. This has all ended. And the economy now, even in Standard & Poor's very biased reckoning, is in serious trouble. The financial costs of this operation, I mean, not just defense expenses, but things like general economic losses, reconstruction costs. Since November, the economic losses are over $3 billion a month. Now, that's according to the Israeli Central Bank. And you're talking about an absence of almost 1.3 million people from their jobs. Huge decrease in economic activity, especially investments, tourism, trade, investment, finance, even the stock market, in a period of severe instability. Now, Haaretz, most of you know that the Israeli newspaper Haaretz is no fan of Netanyahu, and one of the articles I came across had the title that Netanyahu was destroying the economy long before the war because of his legal reform, not to mention the people who he surrounded himself with and his policies on the West Bank, especially when it comes to the settlements, has driven people away from Israel and diverted resources that should have gone elsewhere. This was never an issue before. So, but just as far as sheer military costs, just in isolation, you're talking about $40 billion American dollars. That's, you know, basic funding, weaponry, training, whatever. Not to mention they've brought in about 28,000 mercenaries, each one costing the treasury about 13,000 euros a month. The state budget is now in as much of a crisis as anything else. Making it worse is that this war is not going to be won by Israel. You're talking about massive borrowing at this point. And I'm not even so sure, at least in the short term, the fact that the financial world is dominated by Jews, if that's really going to matter because of the lack of a profit margin here. And they may raise taxes. Costly borrowing and interest rates are going up. Their infamous financial acumen is not helping right now, assuming that it's more of a myth. And the shekel is also in trouble. Obviously, the currency rises and falls with production. Just over the last few weeks, it's lost about 6% of its value, and it's at its lowest level in almost a decade. So that means the central bank had to place about $50 billion from its now depleted reserves into the economy to support the shekel. At the end, well, before the war, the financial reserves were about $200 billion, which is not bad, but that's going to be gone very soon if it hasn't already. The Mediterranean gas fields, the author here mentions the Tamar and Leviathan, into the gas field called Leviathan Field, has now been suspended. This was a huge source of income for the state. Indirect things like the insurance cost of Israeli debt. You have Jewish financiers talking about the possibility of default. Even the IMF says that the Israeli economy, if it grows at all, is going to be non-existent, or almost non-existent, but in fact, in reality, it's going to contract. Now, despite the crisis that Netanyahu imposed on the country prior to the war, whatever the chance that had of being mended was eliminated, and not just given the Hamas invasion, but also, or the preemptive Hamas invasion, but also the Israeli invasion of the Gaza, of the West Bank. And when I say invasion, I'm not just talking about the IDF, I'm also talking about the settler movement, many of whom were in the IDF at one time or another. So Israeli markets are seeing a substantial decline. Huge job losses that may or may not ever get replaced, especially when you have the Israeli government saying that this war is going to go on for a while. Supply chains disrupted. Since October, direct investment in Israel has declined by over 63%. That's both foreign and domestic. A host of projects have been postponed, except, of course, having to do with the settlers or the occupied territories. So you're going to have a decline of about 2%, according to the Israeli Statistical Bureau. And, of course, consumption patterns have fallen. You have shortages everywhere now. And it used to be that both the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, using Arab labor, would supply much of the food, vegetables and fruits in particular. Of course, that's not happening anymore, so you have shortages and substantial rises in prices. The government now has to import things that it never had to import before, at high cost. And now you have the boycott of shipping in certain places. Even that's now going to become impossible. Many of the articles that I've come across talks about the tourism sector, which is one of the most sensitive and one of the most lucrative sectors of the economy. This has collapsed entirely, which shouldn't surprise anybody. Security tensions, even prior to the war, and all the travel warnings, you have zero tourism. By the end of this year, had the war not occurred, the central bank says that tourism would have given almost $10 billion to the GDP by the end of the year. And I think these numbers are fudged, but it's about, they say it's $3 billion from tourism. I think tourism is zero. I don't know anyone who's going to go on vacation in Israel now, especially when you have massive dislocations within Israel itself. Travel restrictions, the massive decrease in air travel. So you will have transportation and the aviation sectors in trouble. There's been about 3,000 layoffs, if not firings, at the main Ben-Gurion airport, and a massive decline as well. And as they find other places to send their money, there's no reason to go back to Israel. Because even if the war ended tomorrow, no one is going to have a lot of confidence in peace in the future. Many international airlines canceled their flights. March 30th of this year is the deadline to possibly renew them. But the economy not only has come to a standstill, but it is now declining into debt. Now, Costco, that's COSCO, the China Overseas Shipping Company, not Costco, which is China's state-backed, not necessarily state-owned, but state-backed massive shipping giant, has boycotted Israeli ports. Now, this is a serious matter because you're talking about the fourth largest container shipping line in the world, and it controls about 11% of the trade of the entire globe. Now, it's not threatened in the Red Sea. China is a big ally of Iran and Russia. And China's close ties with Iran, they're not in any danger from the Houthi rebels for very obvious reasons. Not to mention, Costco also connects with the Israeli shipping line, ZIM, which now doesn't have the support of Costco anymore. Shipping costs are going to go through the roof if they're ever accomplished at all. And they're already short of ships because now they have to do what the Chinese used to. Their strategic partnership is now history. They have ports. The one in Hafia, the Bay Port, which is operated by a Chinese company, SIPG. And that itself is dependent on the Costco ships showing up. So it's not a security matter. They claim it's an operational matter, but it can't be a security matter. China is the purchaser of about 90% of Iranian oil exports. Chances of the Houthis firing on a state-owned Chinese company ridiculous. It's not going to happen. And international shippers, as of a few days ago, haven't been notified as to the reason. Now they have a Hong Kong-based subsidiary, OOCL. They're just saying that they're not really giving anything. They're giving very vague reasons for this. They're claiming that this is a simple matter of operation. But even if they weren't boycotting, which they clearly are, the decline in the Israeli economy is such that it wouldn't matter anyway. But having Costco refused to service Israeli ports is a huge blow that I don't think has even been mentioned in the mainstream yet, except maybe the financial press. So the protracted war in Gaza and Israel's isolation obviously is taking a huge toll on its economy. And that would be even worse if the war continues to expand. An Israeli economist, Joseph Ziera, who is at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, talks about the recession that Israel's in. And when someone says recession, we know what they really mean. A deep recession, he says, which is just a depression, but you're not allowed to use that word anymore. And despite all the pressure, economic and otherwise, that has been brought to bear on Tel Aviv, nothing is going to change, despite all of the evil which they have committed, which they justify. By the way, when that South African report came out, you could figure what the Israeli response was. And I like the fact that they went so cliche about it, you know, blood libel, anti-Semitism, because now everyone's just going to laugh at that. Anytime they use those careworn phrases and slogans, people are going to laugh, because that's exactly how they're justifying what they're doing there. So Ziera has been talking quite a bit about the collapse of the Israeli economy. He sees a deep recession, quote-unquote, in 2024. And he says it's domestic demand, tourism, and wholesale, you know, big consumption item purchases, as well as investment, domestic and otherwise, that these are going to go down. With a massive rise in military costs, the economy has no chance, at least in the short and medium term. between October 7th and 19th of last year, just that period of time, just a little bit more than a week, 40% of flights to the country were canceled, and they have not been resuscitated. Now, again, I mentioned tourism. In this case, this author says a 76% collapse in tourism. I think it's much greater than that. Somehow, in November of last year, 38,000 tourists came to Israel. Of course, November of 22 was 370,000. But that comes directly from the Ministry of Tourism. So at the end of October of last year, you had 300 Israeli economists sending an open letter to Netanyahu and, of course, the settler finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, who of course, is a member of one of these settler parties. And of these guys, you have one of the former governors of the Bank of Israel. You have senior finance ministry officials who are saying this war can destroy the economy in the short and medium terms. And in the letter, they say immediate measures have to be taken to prevent major damage. And that was a while ago. So on October 9th of last year, that early on, the Bank of Israel sold $30 billion worth of bonds trying to control the shekel, and that money is going to run out. That has to come directly from the balance sheet. Now, Ziera says that this deep depression, recession as he calls it, existed before the war. The Gaza war being, you know, the greatest one, but the judicial overhaul plan eliminated the prejudice in Israel's security, and in especially her stability. That already, and I mentioned the Haaretz article mentions this too, before the war started, the severe lack of confidence in the government in Israeli society, because Netanyahu can't even satisfy his allies anymore. And so before this war, you had a massive decrease in investments. And the violence in the West Bank prior to this Gaza war didn't help matters. Now, the first and second intifadas, you had similar numbers. They're vaguely similar. This is the worst they've ever faced, partially because they can't hide behind anything anymore. This is so out in the open. They have to rely entirely on their control of Western governments, however long that holds out. The so-called recessions from 1989 and then 97 and 99, these lasted a long time. Second Intifada from 2000 roughly to 2004. Both of these saw massive declines in investment. This, however, Ziera says, is very different. The civilian population is always harmed in these wars. Prior to this, wars with Egypt or Syria was a different story. Right now, this is destroying the civilian population. So people go out less, people don't want to buy, and certainly not make big decisions financially. And this will last for the foreseeable future. So you have this rising risk, and everything now is up in the air, including the confidence in the government as a whole, not just the parties, not Netanyahu personally. And the very fact that Hamas pulled off this very ballsy gamble, a lot of confidence in the IDF has dissipated. And that's as serious as anything else. No one knows where this is going to end, and the government is not helping matters by saying that they're just going to continue this, knowing full well that they're always talking about depopulation. Every once in a while, someone will admit it from the Knesset. That one Knesset member who endorsed the South African application, there's a vote. I don't know if it's been accomplished yet to kick him out of the Knesset. So no dissent to mitigate any of this is going to be permitted. But it's not just financially. Things like building new factories or expanding companies, making major decisions, both at the corporate and the personal level, these have been put on hold. And everyone involved is losing money. Now, Ziera also said that he doesn't believe the official statistics. He thinks everything's worse than what they're saying, which is nothing new. They're trying to claim, you saw this in Wall Street Journal and these other idiots want to say that there's going to be some growth in the future, and he says that's simply not going to happen. You can't have domestic productivity increase when you have the military reserve crisis. Israel simply doesn't have the men to man both its economy and a major war. A major war that Israel doesn't seem to be winning. But Ziera says it's tough to estimate, but the collapse of the GDP, not, you know, necessarily Ukraine level levels of collapse, but this is in the future. And the reserves can't hold out for very long, especially in the financial department. And part of this cost is going to have to be paid by the government, which is another way of saying the U.S. is going to ramp up its assistance. The government doesn't pay direct labor compensation for a reservist who gets called up, but they do hold the spot, and that alone is showing a lot of lost money and destroyed profits. So companies go to Tel Aviv looking for assistance. Either way, it's a diversion of a huge amount of resources. So Ziera says the risks to the economy are going to be here so long as Israel doesn't make peace. Ziera and this laundry list of economists, their open letter to Netanyahu say, so long as as Israel makes no effort to make peace with the Palestinians, the massive hemorrhaging of money is going to increase, and it's going to be permanent. The U.S. has been in a depression since 2009, at least, probably longer than that. And already tons and tons of weaponry has been shipped to Israel. The U.S. doesn't have this money anymore like it did in the 60s and 70s. Then you have Arab citizens of Israel, which has always been a weird group of people, not just in the occupied territories. Of course, they're the first to go. You know, and of course, in the occupied territories, no one is working. And so Arabs who have worked or received money from anyone working in the West Bank or the Gaza Strip now have nothing. So you have J.P. Morgan Chase now saying that the economy will shrink by 11% given what's happened at the end of last year. That the initial projections from October, before October 2nd, were way too optimistic. And there's a paper by Nikolai Alexandru, who wrote on October 27th, published about a day before Israel began the ground operations. So this is a while ago. Netanyahu was saying this is a long and difficult campaign. J.P. Morgan is not lending anymore. In fact, of all the Wall Street firms, Morgan has been the most pessimistic, and people listen to J.P. Morgan. They've sold Israeli assets almost to the bone. The stock index in Tel Aviv, and this is months ago, was down 11% in local currency terms. And as I mentioned, the shekel is now slumped way beyond a short-term fix. Somehow, while J.P. Morgan, on the one hand, says that you're going to see 11% shrinkage in 2024, somehow they also say that the gross domestic product will grow by 2%. That doesn't make any sense, of course. So once they came out with this 11% drop, they then backtrack and say, well, this is seasonally adjusted. So they had to go back on this. So they still say the risks are going to be extremely negative, and that they then backtrack even further, saying that the impact on the war on Israel's economy remains difficult because of the very high uncertainty and the scale and duration of the conflict. So J.P. Morgan speaks out of both sides of its mouth. They're not telling the truth about the 11%. And that would make sense given everything that we've said so far. This is nothing. You know, 2014, war with Hamas lasted about 7-8 weeks. And 2006, the Hezbollah war in Lebanon didn't affect very much. J.P. Morgan will say then that, quote, the current war has had a much larger impact on domestic security and confidence, end quote. This is why you should believe their initial figure. Yes, they've had wars with Gaza in the past. They've had wars with southern Lebanon in the past. And it didn't, the economic concern wasn't raised. It didn't really affect anything. That means, at least as far as investors and banks are concerned, this is a very, very, very different kind of war. So by late October last year, the interest rate in shekels was almost 5%. And this policy was meant to help the shekel, but that has long since failed. So everything has changed here. The economy is suffering. The economy is shrinking. But you have the spokesman for the IDF, Daniel Hagari, saying that the war is going to continue through 2024 and beyond. He said on New Year's Eve, tonight, 2024 begins and our goals require a long war and we are preparing ourselves accordingly. We have a smart plan to manage our deployments, taking into account reserves, the economy, families, and resupply, as well as the continuation of combat and training, end quote. So the IDF is doing nothing to reassure investors. Sometimes they say that they're just mopping up, but no one really believes that anymore. Even the defense minister, Yoav Gallant, has gone back and forth on that issue. They've lost the war, and this is the first time that there's this no hope for any recovery that won't hurt the Israeli reputation. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.